That was Ed Osborne solo, Dobro's. Dobro?
Yeah, Dobro, I guess we call it, yeah.
Dobro's tart or something. So you said that you've an amusing story about the compositional process of that?
Yeah.
One, that critter?
Yeah, well, not sort of the compositional process, but actually more the response to it. I got it recently where basically the piece, I start playing, and it's going into a delay unit, and gradually, and it's just providing a straight delay, meaning that it might change the time a little bit from when the signal goes in to when it comes out, and gradually that sort of shifts around to break up the signal. And so as I play the, you see me doing things, and then you hear sort of different things being fed back in and out. And so the idea was that you'd start with a piece where what you see is what you hear, and then by the end, what you hear is definitely not what you see. It's some sort of weird blenderized version of it. So when I did this a few months ago, when I was in Frankfurt, I did a performance, and it was in a small place, and the guy who organized it said, well, usually we have these performances, and then people stick around afterwards and have a discussion about it. And I was like, okay, fine, well, whatever. And so I do this piece and, you know, some other pieces, and afterwards we're having the discussion. And so I'm trying to, they start asking me about this one in particular, and I'm trying to resist drawing cultural stereotypes, but there are a number of people there who were very serious about their music, let's just put it that way, and they were trying to figure out, when it gets to near the end of the piece and you hear these different things, does that affect what you play? And I don't really think about it. I just think about sort of like you're feeding stuff into the blender and what comes out. You know, it sounds okay to me, but, you know, I like what's going in and I like what's coming out. However, having sort of positive associations with both ends of the process didn't seem to wash very well with them. So it just didn't compute at all that I could be sort of happy playing what I was playing and not bothered that it was getting sort of messed up and disturbed. This was compounded by the fact that there was some confusion about the technical process that was going on. So I'm in this place and I don't speak German, much to my chagrin. And so we're having this discussion in English, and
Most of the Germans speak English very well.
Yeah, there were a few people who spoke English pretty well there, and then a few people who were sort of so-so. And so when I went back over describing the process that was going on, I guess there was some, maybe it was a translation thing or something, but the idea of delay, I think, to them meant sort of like an echo, sort of the usual delay thing, or, you know, and they just, this sort of straight delay that would happen the way I was using it didn't really sort of compute. So what happened was I would sort of explain it, and then there were a couple of people who didn't quite get it. I mean, oh, so it's like this, and I say, no, it's sort of like this. And then there was some other person who was there who had sort of gotten a better idea of it, and I think they got a better idea of it. And so then he starts explaining to these other guys in German what I was doing, and then they start asking more questions of this guy,
it's
and
like
they start,
broken telephone.
Yeah, exactly. But then they immediately sort of like took me out of the loop on it, and they were going back and forth, you know, for like 5 minutes. And you know, eventually I had to break in and say, "Well, what did you guys decide?" Because they were speaking in German, I could tell what was going on. It, like, finally, like one of them had reached some understanding, and I was like, "Well, you know, what do you know?" It's like, not like you don't have the artist right there to make
so
everything
was it,
clear.
Yeah, really. That type of thing has happened. I was in Hungary and I had things translated, some of my texts translated into Hungarian, and the same thing would happen. Sort of, there'd be this heated discussion about what my intent was, and I was sitting there and like, was Lifestyles of the Poor and Shameless satirical, or was it just this? And it was great.
Yeah.
And then I'd say the same thing and say, well, what conclusions did you come to?
Right.
It was kind of fun. I thought it was very amusing and very fun most of the time, you know?
Yeah, it's fun to get sort of a different perspective on your stuff.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, should we listen to something?
Yeah, we'll listen to something. This is What's the next thing I have queued up? It's on the first DAP machine, I guess, the one that we didn't just play. This is a piece, there's a story that goes with this one too. There's a piece called In Memoriam, Elisha Blakeman and Tabitha Babbitt. And basically this is a piece for skis. When I talk about the skis, these are instruments where I've taken a ski and taken a metal wire, run it the length of the ski and put a little pickup on it. So it's a single stringed instrument. And in this piece, two skis are laid flat, and then myself and one other person are bowing, placed flat and in parallel, and are bowing with other skis across it. It's sort of a visual thing. It's looks like you're sawing something, or perhaps feeding a piece of wood into one of those table saws. And the two people referred to in the title, Elisha Blakeman and Tabitha Babbitt, were both members of Shaker communities in the last century. Elisha Blakeman invented a single-stringed instrument called the piano violin, which, of course, endeared him to me, another monochord. And he used it to convert people to being Shakers, which, since Shakers, one of the main things about their society is that they're strictly divided by sex, or gender, I should say, and do not have, shall we say, intimate relations at all. So convincing people to be Shakers requires a bit of...
Even when they get married?
Even when they get married, yeah, they don't...
So it's just for procreation, in other words?
No, they don't even procreate. They have to convert everybody.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is why they're...
Well, how do they have children?
They don't have children.
Oh, okay.
So this is why there aren't very many Shakers left.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so anyway,
are you a Shaker?
No, I'm not. Oh, although I grew up in a Quaker family, so it's sort of the Shakers were one branch of the Quakers that sort of left.
Quakers are really neat people, though.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. I must profess to not actually being anything anymore, but I did grow up in a Quaker family. So Elisha Blakeman was very good at using his piano violin to play Shaker songs and convert people, but for some reason the elders in his community didn't want him to do this. It's not really clear to me why.
Too frivolous.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe he was working with
it. Too much fun.
Yeah.
Maybe he was getting off too much on it.
It could be. Maybe he had a drummer or something and it just didn't go over real big. although one, as a side note, one very interesting thing about Quaker music, and there's a whole form of Quaker music, is around 1870, for some reasons, saxophones and other instruments were allowed. And I've seen pictures of, you know, these Shaker women, Shaker, not Quaker, Shaker women who were in full regalia holding onto these saxophones. It's a very strange image. Anyway, to make a long story
short.
What's
the regalia, though? Are they in a special costume?
Yeah, they have very sort of restrictive clothing, you know, like for the women's skirts.
I thought you were going to say risque.
Yeah, no.
The opposite.
Yeah, no, for women, like skirts all the way to the floor and bonnets on their head and things like that.
And playing saxophones.
Yeah, playing saxophones.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so the elders in Elisha Blakeman's community didn't like him doing this, and eventually they sort of gave him a cease and desist order, and he decided he would leave these Shakers rather than give up his instrument, which I thought was fabulous.
Yeah.
And then
very noble.
Yeah. And then Tabitha Babbitt, the other woman, the woman in the title, is one of the people who's credited with the invention of the circular saw about 1810.
A woman?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
She was
far out.
So this piece is in honor of those two people, and I'm playing on this, and Brenda Hutchinson is also playing on this recording, who's a very fabulous local sound artist.
Oh, is she living here these days?
Yeah, well, she's splitting her time between here and New York.
She is very fabulous.
Yeah.
So this is a piece of Ed Osborne's called...
In Memoriam, Elisha Blakeman and Tabitha Babbitt.
Beautiful.
Thanks, Barb.
I think you might have played that same version, because I remember, could you have, or am I lying?
Yeah, no,
am
I'm
I making
you
it up?
Would never lie, Barb.
No, I love the saying, oh yeah, I played that version 3 years ago when you were on the show, and then someone will say, but Barb, we just recorded that last fall at Wesleyan.
Right. No.
You know. So when did you record that?
This was actually...
Could you have played it last time on the show?
I think we played the last piece, but it was that piece the last time, but it was a different recording.
Version, yeah. But I do remember that we talked about Brenda Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Because I told you I did this thing, this film called Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and the soundtrack was different versions of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and it was all about assassination and... baseball in America. And Brenda's, she did an orchestral piece, and there was one fragment that we used of her piece.
Oh, great.
So that's like my interaction with Brenda. It was great. Made it about maybe 7 years ago or so.
Yeah, Brenda's a real gem to have around. She's just a good person, but she's also done, there's a big music box thing that's down at the Exploratorium now that she made.
Yeah,
which is really nice.
That.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, it's a nice thing. And I don't know if it's still up for a while. On top of Twin Peaks, she had a little piece that she did with somebody else where there are these pieces of plexiglass and various other things that wind would blow through and make sounds,
oh,
and you could sort of play
with
that.
That's really fun. So yeah. Is that still up?
I'm not sure. I think it might be. It was part of...
was that part of the thing you did at Eichelberger?
Yeah, yeah. So Secession Gallery.
Tell us about that.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was a neat thing.
Right. This was put together by the Secession Gallery, which is a gallery that doesn't have a location. Well, they organize shows where people find locations and then respond to the site, make pieces for the site. And so this is a piece that had, I think it was called Sight is Music, and
yeah.
People chose different sites to work with sound. And Brenda's piece was up at the top of Twin Peaks. There's a guy named Wang Po Shu, who's I've never actually met, but also lives around here.
Is he the one at Cap Street?
No,
someone else.
No.
So what did he do?
He made this, it was really actually very nice. The this little, it's called the California Earth Song Greeting Card. And what he'd done was gone to the Geological Survey and gotten this recording of the seismic recording of the 89 earthquake and sort of compressed it down. So you get this little greeting card and you'd open it up, and it was one of those ones that makes sound when you do this. So he'd built these circuits. So when you open it up, you'd hear this little sort of compressed version of the, you know, sound of the earth moving. So it's sort of like California talking to you when you open up the card.
So it's how did you get, I mean, did you send away for the card or something? Or
well,
what?
For the show, you could you could send in for it, but they were sort of expensive to produce, so there was only a very small number that were made. I think he wanted to make more, but it required more money. So I think there may be 20 or 30 that were actually made. And I did, for that show, I did a piece at Eichelberger's, which is actually still up. They wanted me to leave it up for a while, which is, there's a speaker over the doorway, and it plays sounds of the type that you would hear in a bar restaurant place like Eichelberger's is. It's not actually a live feed from inside the restaurant.
Which is what I thought it would
be. Right, that's what a lot of people think. But that's okay. That's,
yeah.
You know. So it's sort of a fun thing.
You hear
like,
ice tinkling and
right.
In Ed's piece, you know, outside on the sidewalk, it's kind of neat. You hear ice tinkling and bar top, sort of bar, you know, kind of sounds and things like that. And it's nice.
Oh,
it is good.
Yes, it is fun.
Especially since my girlfriend bought me a couple of martinis.
And they have fabulous martinis there.
They have fabulous martinis. And that made it even better.
Right. They have my favorite martinis in all of San Francisco.
Really?
You have to get the right bartender, the ones that really know how to make the French martinis there with their special potato vodka. Those are the ones.
Yeah. What's a French martini?
This is
Tell me.
A French martini is... the version that there are probably several versions, but the one that I know is my favorite is the you have a vodka, it's up with, and you can either have a twist of of lemon, or their specialty is they take a slice of orange peel, sort of squeeze it a little bit so some of the juices come out, and light that on fire with a lighter, so it burns it slightly. You get a little flame, and they drop it in, so
wow.
You have this sort of burnt orange taste. And they use instead of just straight vermouth, they use Lillet, which is a special French.
Oh yeah, I love Lillet.
Yeah.
So what kind of? Just a minute now. What kind of vodka? It's not Stoli or.
I can't remember the name of the vodka they use there. It's some sort of potato vodka from Russia or Poland or somewhere.
Wow.
However, you can also, my substitute for that, if I can't get that, is Absolute Citroën. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
You mean Citroën.
Citroën, whatever.
Citroën.
That's a car,
that's
isn't
a car,
it? Yeah. You put it. That's
French,
another version. You put a car.
I happen to speak French, so don't start pulling things on moi.
That's right. Are you a Quebecer?
I'm a Quebecois.
Quebecois.
But I'm an Anglo.
Right.
But I certainly know the difference between citron and citroën, actually.
I stand corrected, Barb.
Well, my favorite, I have to just say that, just to continue this for a little bit longer, because I'm very animated at this discussion. I'm saying, screw my mango zinger. God, I wish I had brought a, you know, thermos full of martinis. But anyway, I just stoli and vermouth, I guess, and a couple of olives does it for me, too, yeah. I have to say. But that, I must try that. And you know where they have the best margaritas?
Where's that?
At Zuni's. Because they squeeze fresh lime juice, and it's just wonderful. It's just perfect. Well, perfectly wonderful margarita. We'll have to sort of do a circuit very soon.
Right.
Okay.
Do you think they'll be open after we get off the air?
I think they close it too.
Oh,
actually.
That's too bad.
It's
I wonder
very
if they deliver.
Uncivilized. I used to do the show from 3 to 7, you know, every 2 weeks.
Right.
And I lived in San Francisco, and when I first did the show, Mark Trail was my board op. And we would always be screaming over the air. It was 3 to 7, and it was before any FCC regulations whatsoever. So I was very raucous. And Mark, we were just so terrible. We'd stop. I'd say, you know, turn this off. I don't like it. And then Mark would sort of interject, and he'd say, "Barb is, we're stopping this piece because Barb said it's a piece of, just use your imagination." But we were pretty, pretty raucous, you know. Sort of talk about, you know, what time of the month it was, and
right. Well, you can still talk about that. Right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Not against
it's the
FCC rules.
Fifth of the month, right?
Right. Yeah.
And not that it matters at this point, but anyway, we'll get to that. But we would scream out, "Barb wants anchovy pizza. Bring it now. If anyone's up, please, please." So we would always be requesting booze and drugs and pizzas. And once a guy came with a very, very big pledge.
Oh, yeah?
And he said, "Kiss me." And I realized, why should I have, you know? But I was so dumbfounded that I did.
You did.
You know.
And how was it?
Don't ask. And once I've had guests that have been naked on the show.
Really?
And like, so what?
You know, you can't
it's
tell.
It's like radio, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you sound different if you're naked on the radio?
Nah. I don't think so. Well, you're naked now.
Yes, that's right. It's not a pretty sight, I can assure you.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that. So, let's get on with the music.
Okay, let's get on with the music. This next piece is, I'm going to cue up, is a piece, I think, called Sale Pending, which is, I did it about 10, maybe 11 years ago. My gosh, how time goes on. And this is a real live piece of old analog synthesized electronic music.
I love it.
Done many moons ago on a gigantic blue synthesizer, which we just referred to as a big blue synthesizer.
Where was this?
This was Wesleyan back in Connecticut.
Was it like the big Moogs and the big Buchlas and stuff?
Yeah, it's the same basic idea. I think it was built from a kit.
I love those.
And it's really a fabulous sound. And seeing as it's almost the top of the hour, it's time to do a station ID, which I would love to do because I've never gotten to do it. So this is KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, listener-sponsored radio in Northern and Central California.
Very good.
Thanks.
Now we're going to hear Ed Osborne's Sale Pending.